Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Yeah, like watching the Man United game last night and just having messages coming from Man United fans on my WhatsApp complaining about Luke Shaw raking his foot down somebody's shin and saying it should never have been a free kick. Like, you know, this is the type of shit you get people talking whenever you're trying to watch a football match with them. People can't be trusted to have the correct opinion, so I just avoid them.
Hi guys, Jack Grealish here. Delighted to say that I've signed a new deal with Aston Villa.
So I left while you were sleeping, that's all it took. And I chalked.
Here we are, the 20th episode of the Villa Podcast. Liam, did you think you would ever make it this far? I knew I would, but I had my doubts whether or not you would.
I had my doubts as well, Colin, but I'm glad to be here.
Got a text off you. We're not going to do WhatsApp whinges today. We got a text off you earlier saying, how many episodes is this now? I counted it up. It's like, this is the 20th. And the only reply I got was, fucking hell. It's like, is that a good thing or a bad thing?
It's what it is. It's 20 episodes. Let's get it fucking over with.
And you know what? We got through 20 episodes about somebody saying it is what it is until you just ruined it there. So, don't really have a name for this yet. I might do before we push publish. Just the idea, there's no idea. Look, there's no game on Villa's, which we're playing Everton tonight. And COVID has riddled the team. So we're just filling in time here. But also responding to a call from our lovely loyal fans who have all asked for more episodes. But as keen as I was to give it to you, I just had no fucking idea what the hell we would talk about. So put the call out a few times. You would have heard me pleading at the end of some episodes. Thankfully, you started listening and sending an email to thevillapodcast@gmail.com. Honestly, get in touch. Even if you don't want it read out, I'd be happy to hear from you. So I think just going to dive straight into it, Liam, if you're happy enough with that.
Go for it.
Just get the fuck on with it, says you. So the first email, right, is actually one of the loveliest things I've ever gotten or received, and you're playing a bit of a role in this as well. So it's coming the whole way from Norway. A guy called Paul. So it's Paul, as he says at the end of the email, it's the fancy pants Norwegian version of Paul. So it's spelled P-A-A-L. But I did go to the bother of going to howtopronounce.com to figure out how this is pronounced in Norwegian. And it's basically Paul, but obviously somebody from Norway is saying it. So it's Paul. It sounds better. But I think probably for the purposes of avoiding being insulting to a whole country, I'll just say Paul. And I hope that's okay with you. It actually reminded me of thinking about Norwegian and Aston Villa and the worst attempt. Now, I've never been amazing with women, but the worst attempt I ever had at chatting up a girl was standing outside. I was in college, standing outside this bar or whatever it was. It looked good. Like, you know, what's crack? And whatever the accent was, it was obviously different. So I was like, oh, where are you from? She said, Norway. And the first thing I said was, oh, John Carew.
That would have been awkward enough even if she was a football fan. There's no guarantee she was going to know who John Carew was.
Yeah, and even if she did, like, who cares? You know, like her saying to me, like, not even Robbie Keane, like her saying to me, Damien Duff, yeah. Although, like, you know what, let's be honest, if the shoe was on the other foot, I would have went for it. But, yeah, let's talk about Damien Duff, but she had no idea who he was talking about. I was like, oh, you know, brilliant footballer. And that was it. Like, you know, she didn't say anything else. I didn't say anything. It was one of those ones where you just, like, cut your losses. Like, there's no point in even trying to regain this. I heard it all back in my head. I realized how sad it sounded.
I was really going to hoping that was going to end with you saying, and we're getting married next week.
Tell you what, it would have worked in a lap dancing club, what? And our John Carew joke for all you Villa fans out there. Sean-Ray, great email subject as well. More podcast episodes, please. I don't think Liam's going to appreciate that, Paul. Hi, guys. Norwegian Villa fan here responding to your Twitter call for emails. I just want to say that I absolutely love the podcast. I've been supporting Villa since around 1980. The last decade pre-Smith has been so infuriating in many ways, watching the club doing silly stuff and players being rubbish. This is why I always, even now when we are looking pretty good, you're going to think this is me. I'm anxious and scared of bad performances and the club imploding. Paul's my type of fella. So much to stick that I am in a heart attack mode every game, and a bad performance ruins my weekend, which is not popular with the wife and kids. All these emotions I feel are echoed in the podcast. I can hear my own joy and frustration in you, and I love that the show is usually straight after games. Putting us under a bit of pressure there, Paul, I'm not going to lie, but we will keep that up when my need for a fix is strongest. I also like that you mix the raw game. I'm just sort of reading out great things about yourself now. Raw game reaction with knowledge and analysis, and your accents are just the icing on the cake, which, to be honest, that really made my day, because I'm always worried that people can't understand us. I think people could understand you a lot more clearly than me, but you think differently.
Yeah. I don't think there's much in it. I think we're both equally incomprehensible.
Well, he's asked what part of Ireland we're from. We're from Derry, up in the north. Technically Northern Ireland, but we're still Irish citizens. That's for another podcast. So it gets into it anyway. So I feel like me and Paul are soulmates here. I always worry that we are going to fail and get relegated. At what point do you stop worrying about relegation? The 40-point mark? Or only when we are mathematically safe? Thank you ever so much. He goes on to say that our podcast is now the first that he looks out for after every game. Up the Villa, all the best for 2021. Thanks a million, Paul. This is going to surprise you, Liam. I'm going to come straight in and answer that I think we can stop worrying about relegation.
It's starting to look a lot better than that. Even my my insistent prediction of us finishing between 9th and 14th is now looking that it's at risk of being wrong. I mean, we should definitely be aiming a lot higher than that, particularly given the renewed interest in Jack Grealish. Everybody at the club has to target keeping him, and that means target and finishing a lot higher than 9th.
You finally come around to my way of thinking. Like, I know I was a wreck at the start of the season because I was A, worried about relegation, and B, wanting to come into the top four. So, like, that's just a terrible concoction. And it was because of that. It was like, yeah, we need to push on there. Like, if we're ever going to keep Jack Grealish, this is a year. Like, it's amazing that we have him this year. It's unbelievable. And in the like of Barkley and stuff like that. Yeah, like, this could be a really era-defining moment for Aston Villa. Now, it will still go well. They're in great hands, ownership-wise. The structures are amazing. The manager's amazing. There's a great sort of base there now of players. Even if you compare it to last year and compare it to the year before last year, like, look at the base we're now working with. It's infinitely better. But you could just accelerate everything by getting top six this season, maybe keeping Jack Grealish again for another season. You just go on to a different trajectory then.
Yeah, to be honest, I don't really trust much that comes out of your mouth anymore, because I think after we signed Wesley last year, you were texting me saying Champions League pushes on.
But anyway, thanks for that, Paul. This one's from Connor, short and sweet. Who would you like to sign in this window? Thanks for that, Connor. It's a good question. Do you want to go first, Liam?
If we ignore the difficulties with signing players in January and any financial fair play implications, if Villa go big again this month like they did in the summer, Villa's squad, it needs fleshing out. We were worried about it before the season began, and we've seen that Dean Smith is still worried about it because he clearly doesn't really trust the squad either. So, as I've said ad nauseum, Villa need a left back for obvious reasons. Do you think I'm deluded in thinking that Villa could just go and get Gossens from Atalanta or Tagliafico from Ajax? Would you take Zinchenko or one of Chelsea's nut jobs that have been cast off after they signed Chilwell? I think you have to go bigger than those three. I'm looking at Gossens.
So I was there, right? So I went into transfermarket.co.uk and did my little football manager style search, left back 23 to
30. Pace 20. Often ability 20.
Yeah. Oh, attitude was always the big one. Like, a player was five times better if his attitude was 17 or up. You know, no matter how shit they were. That was a little loop around the football manager. But I saw Gossens and I was like, again, I always had the same question. Like, am I being deluded just thinking you can take one of those boys? Maybe not. Like, again, the Premier League has an appeal. Villa obviously have an appeal. But I was sort of aiming my sights a little lower and thinking about the Douglas Luiz factor from Brazil, and I was going for Rogério. So I hadn't heard of him, I'm not going to lie, but he's the constant left back for Sassuolo, who are having an amazing season in Serie A. And he's 23 today. He's from Brazil. He was playing for Brazil under 20s the whole way up in Brazil. And but like, this is stupid because I have no idea what he's like.
Yeah. you're still, like, you went on the transfer market that could at UK and then did actually just play football manager.
Yeah. Well, put it this way, and I'm not in charge, so it's fine. If I was running this exact team in these exact circumstances on football manager, I would be taking a punt on Rogério.
Right. Well, that's that answer, Ben.
The Zinchenko thing, it's surely his wages are just not worth it. Like, he'd be coming in over 100 grand a week. It's just pointless. I even thought about Danny Rose.
Danny Rose is one of those players that every time I've seen him, he's been good. So I assume he's absolutely shit whenever I'm not watching him, because, you know, he struggles and people don't like him and fans of clubs hate him. And yeah, I'm not sure about Danny Rose.
Do you know what I like about Danny Rose? He's 30 and he's already on loan at Newcastle, but surely you could just convince Spurs, like, you know, just send him on loan here is better. And it's even just for a stopgap, you know, for a season or a season and a half.
But, like, but to be honest, if Mourinho's looking at which manager suits his style of play, he's going to leave him up at Steve Bruce's Newcastle.
That's fair enough. But, like, I heard Rose in a podcast recently talking about making the Euros, and he was happy that the Euros were pushed back to 2021, and he still believes that he's England's best left back and stuff. And
there you go. That's attitude above 17.
But it does sound a bit bonkers. But I like that somebody's thinking that big, you know, because you have to, like, you might not be as good as you think you are, and you might not make it to where you want to make it, but you do have to start putting in the action to get there. And, you know, like, the byproduct of that might not be the Euros, but it might be a good left back. And the question is always an upgrade on Matt Target, and I think it would be. But he's 30, and, like, yeah, you're probably not going to get him on loan this season, and he's not worth buying next season. And this goes on top of, like, I think Barkley should also just be just get him done in January if you can, because that's just, you said it the last day, there's a good bit on Barkley if nobody's listened to it in the last podcast after the Liverpool FA Cup match. And it just shows a Villa series, yeah, and I think it just shifts the consciousness of everybody, even in the changing rooms and at the club, and Jack Grealish included. You know, now you've signed somebody like Barkley, a 27-year-old England player. You know, it's easier for Grealish to stay. It's easier to get a bigger player. Even if Grealish goes, that's offset because you've signed a big player already, you know, so you're more attractive. It just makes sense all over. So if that can be done, get it done. But then I thought of, and this isn't an option anymore, but the Calvin Phillips thing was interesting last summer, wasn't it? Like, you know, before Leeds came up.
Yeah.
How would that have worked?
I don't think Calvin Phillips works for Villa. I don't think he works at all. It's just a version of Dougie, and, you know, I'm sure Leeds fans would disagree, but I don't think he's as good as him.
Yeah.
I mean, Dougie's got more to his game. But yeah, no, like, it's far too similar a player, and both of a similar ability that I don't think it can possibly work. But speaking about that, like, you know, Villa do definitely need midfielders. That's the next spot you'd go for after after left back. Like the midfield at the minute, there's no rotation possible. I mean, you look at our bench and you're turn around, you've got Nakamba, Hourihane, and fucking Henry Lansbury there. You know, that's not ideal. Surely Donny van de Beek is available. Am I going too big again? Because if I am, you're not going to like the next one.
Like,
because
go on.
Just, you know, along your agent Dougie role, like, you know, could Douglas Luiz convince Arthur Melo to come from Juventus?
You see, at least I was thinking like Rogério has come from Juventus to Sassuolo, and now Villa can pick him up there. You're wanting to go straight to the source and get him there.
He's already left Barcelona and it hasn't worked out for him. He's not starting for Juventus. And Juventus have a lot of midfielders. He's not as good as Bentancur. He's not going to get in ahead of him, and they play a very similar role. I just think like Villa are in a tricky situation now where you have to try to replace players in your first 11 if you actually want to improve. It's really difficult to replace John McGinn. Like that's going to cost big money, and it's unless you've got amazing scouts, which Villa, you know, do, then I don't. It's going to be really difficult to improve the midfield, but they do need to sign midfielders.
It's actually a really good point. Like we've talked about this loads, not in this podcast, but just the idea. Remember, like Liverpool through Donati's, their biggest weaknesses is on the Villa should think of. What you're saying is it's difficult to replace McGinn, but that's what you have to do. You know, not getting McGinn, like he doesn't need replaced. You know, instantly, but you need to just sign players who are going to put these boys under pressure. Like, you know, Barkley, there's a perfect example, and it shows you how quickly then your mindset changes. Like, after the Fulham game, Villa had won two in a row. Hourihane had scored and set up a goal. And it's like, where does Barkley go? And, you know, we're all still excited, but, like, he had a team that was grand, and, like, another person in another season, you know, might have just thought, right, now we just need a couple of backup options. Better than El Ghazi or whatever you would have been thinking at the time. But no, you just buy Barkley, Hourihane loses out, and it's real tough for him, but the team is instantly better. And that, like, the Liverpool point is, throughout the noughties, he just kept buying squad players, and everybody was on board with that because they needed a better squad. But like, the way to get a better squad is to improve your first team, and then the players will be knocked out, survival of the fittest.
Exactly, absolutely. I couldn't agree more with that. And Even speaking about that, I would say that Villa need another wide player, and preferably one that can rotate across the three positions. Because I think if we're assuming Barkley starts, then all three contenders for that right wing position can be improved on. They're all fairly streaky, and I would just love to be in a position where there are squad players, where Traore, Trezeguet, and El Ghazi are all fighting for to be first sub.
Yeah.
And does David Brooks give you that? I know I've come back down now. You know, I've been reassured by a Welsh friend that he is not Daniel James anyway. So, but to be honest, that's the bare minimum to not be Daniel James.
It's a low bar.
Yeah. And then I was thinking then just along the other mental ideas. But like, you know, don't forget, we took Ross Barkley from Chelsea. Is Dele Alli worth the hassle?
I'm going to say yes, just for how talented he is. Like, he's exceptionally talented, and I think he would really enjoy himself at Villa. He would be the big man. He might, like, look, he might not be putting in the most effort in the world, but like he obviously hadn't been doing that anyway. You know, so he was doing enough to be at that level, and it was great for a long time for Spurs. Mourinho doesn't like it, grand, but I think it would work. And Villa be expensive, but like, and again, just talking about Grealish, Barkley, all these boys are going to fucking love that. And again, it's going to improve the team.
Yeah. So I have Gosens from Atalanta, Van de Beek from Man United, Melo from Juventus, and Dele Alli from Spurs. Who are you after, pal?
I was just going to ask you, what do you think of Michael Olise?
Oh, I've gone way above that now. No, to be honest, I've only seen clips of him, obviously, because he plays for Reading. He looks really tasty, and he looks like exactly the type of player that you would like to be under Dean Smith's tutelage. He looks insanely talented. But again, that is just from clips, which isn't the best way to gauge a player.
Yeah, I saw. I need to get off social media. Like, or not. I don't need to get off it. I just need to stop worrying about what people say. You know, just Villa were linked with him. And in fairness to you, they were linked with him about 12 hours after you texted me about him.
Yeah, you know, unrelated.
Yeah. And somebody had said, oh, more championship players, great. And I was like, oh my God, like, wake up. You know, yeah. Ollie Watkins, Matty Cash, John McGinn was a championship player, technically came through there. Villa came from Scotland to the championship. Like, just judge a player for yourself. Don't decide where he's at and then say, like, you know, or don't see where he's at and then decide that pigeonholes him. There's a lot of class players lying around.
Yeah. We've had this problem before as well. It's not exactly the same, but it's similar with Ireland fans who used to laugh at the idea that we needed to be playing Wes Hoolahan.
Yeah.
Because he couldn't get in the Norwich team and they were only in the championship. It's like, that's a you've seen Wes Hoolahan play for Ireland. You know he's our best player. Or you have to. If you don't, football's not the game for you.
Yeah, but Alex Neil isn't playing him.
Well, exactly.
Next email, this one's from Stephen. Actually, no, this was a message on Instagram. Get us on Instagram, the Villa Podcast Show. Who manages Trezeguet's diet whilst he's injured?
Okay. I'll let you take this one. You're the one that has an unhealthy obsession with Trezeguet's unhealthy eating habits.
I mentioned it once, but turned it into a sting, in fairness. So it's probably propped up on the show a lot, and it's obviously in Steve's head. The point was, I said that Trezeguet has lost his belly. I thought Trezeguet had a bit of a belly last year. Still looked really fit. You see a lot of fit boys carrying a bit of timber around the tire area, but I thought he just looked a bit more streamlined. But who manages his diet while he's injured? Like, well, like John Terry's not doing anything, so he might as well.
Oh, you're trying to give John Terry a job now on the assumption that he doesn't have one.
Yeah.
Right.
I don't know, look after Trezeguet's diet.
Just get off the training pitch.
Yeah, this one's from Scotty. I don't know if that's a real name. Is there? Do you know anybody called Scotty?
Yes.
Oh, do you?
But do you think someone's made up a name?
Scotty? It's just not like, you know, I love the name Scott, but I actually don't know anybody called Scott. My nickname in school was Scone, so in Derry it's Scone, in Dublin it's Scone. Couldn't be called that in Dublin, that would be ridiculous. So it's Scone back home. And I remember an old PE teacher, you know, playing basketball. It was his first class, he just knew to the school. And you know, people, he probably heard people going, Scone, Scone, Scone. And he thought I was called Scott. And he called me Scott for that whole session, and I loved it. I didn't correct him. And obviously he thought I was a fucking loser then when he was looking at the roll call the next day or whatever. But I remember being so disappointed that I wasn't called Scott. So I'm not shitting on the name, but just Scotty. I just don't know anybody called Scotty.
It's the classic nickname, isn't it? Just add a Y at the end, even if it makes the name longer.
Hi guys, love the show and love how you aren't afraid to call it like it is.
Like calling people out for having fake names.
Yeah, more people seem to listen to the show as well when Villa don't win, which is very interesting. I think we're carving a niche out for ourselves as the next Arsenal Fan TV. Everyone knows every changing room has a hierarchy. So what do you think the food chain is in the Villas? Oh yeah, I love this one. Or do you think there's politics in there or people who don't speak? Keep up the good work. Cheers, Scotty. So yeah, I immediately think, like, there's obviously going to be different camps and stuff, right? But at the top of the food chain, you have Grealish, Mings, McGinn and Barkley. And you can jump in here and disagree with me along the way, but like, Grealish is obviously there because he's the alpha. Mings is there because he's the best looking. John McGinn is there because he's the joker, so he's the little annoying one. Like, if I have Greece or whatever, you know, he's not as aesthetically dominant or pleasing as the other ones, but he's there. He's gonna stir it up a little bit and they'll laugh. They'll get a good kick out of him. Barkley's there because everyone's afraid of him and they just don't know exactly what he's going to do or what he's thinking. And he's probably just he's cooler as well. He's come from out of town. And yeah, he just has that sort of reputation. I think that's the top of the changing room anyway. What do you think?
So, do you remember whenever we brought our nephew to Dublin Zoo?
Go on.
Do you remember the gorilla enclosure?
Yeah.
So if anyone's been to Dublin Zoo and they were still awake by the time they got to the gorillas, they'll know that they are, or were anyway, on an island surrounded by a moat. And sitting right in the middle of that island.
Oh, yeah.
On a mound. Silverback. Was Harry the gorilla. Yeah. And for what seemed like 8 hours, our nephew wanted to watch the gorillas. It was probably closer to 5 minutes. There was just an endless procession of gorillas wandering up to and paying homage to Harry the gorilla. Jack Grealish is Harry the gorilla. And if we're going to take this analogy to Breaking Point, I would have to say Matt Target's probably just a flea on his arse. but seriously, during Dean and Jack's promotion charge in 2019, one of the many reasons I really wanted to see Villa go up was because I loved the core of the team. I really didn't want to see it being torn apart. There just seemed to be a great bunch of lads at the club and a great manager. And I would say the crack, no matter where you're sitting, is just brilliant. It just seems like they're a great bunch of genuinely nice lads.
So actually, that's a good point, right? This is why... So the next group, right, are just people who are... They're just comfortable in their own skin, right? That's, they don't actually care that they're not the top dogs, but they're obviously above the runt of the litter. And it's... I've got four. It's Konsa, Harahan, Watkins, and Cash. And I think... that's the group that John Terry is latching onto. So I think he's sitting down in between them and all. Like, you know, he tries to go in with like the silverbacks and that, and they accept him because he's got a good rep. But like he's done with, like, you know, so he's sort of the brunt of the joke now a little bit, and he feels more at home with this group: Konsa, Harahan, Watkins, and Cash.
All right, they're too nice to tell him to piss off.
No, I'd say it's almost like a level. Like he still has enough clout that he can fit in there. And they're also just like, yeah, they're too cool to care about who they're sitting with.
Mm.
You know, like obviously Matt Target wouldn't be sitting with them, but that's just more because of his own ego. Like these boys are completely comfortable. Like that's four. Like they're all good looking as well. Actually, you know, they're all good. They all have a real identity of what they are. You know, Target can't be sitting with these boys. Like, the runt of the litter I have three names, right? You'll be surprised at one of them. Target, Lansbury, obviously, and Bertrand Traore.
Interesting. Go on, explain the Bertrand Traore. Why has he ended up with these two?
I just think he's a bit of a... No, I'm going on absolutely nothing here. Let's qualify that. I think he's a bit of a loner. I think he just... and again... he's almost cool in a sense that like he doesn't care that he's sitting with Target. It doesn't matter to him. Mm. But like the same reason Lansbury is there, because Target will accept him. Traore is just... he's just happy to be able to come in with his head down and sit beside somebody. And yeah. Target's happy that somebody else sit beside him.
I can definitely go along with Bertrand Traore not caring, because yeah, he doesn't care on the pitch anyway where anybody else is or what they're doing, where they're moving to. He just gets on with his own thing and improvises and forces all our people to do whatever he wants to do. So I can go along with that, but okay. I'll accept it.
Is El Ghazi closer to Target's group or Grealish's group?
In his head or in everybody else's head?
I think he's definitely, like both, I think he's definitely closer to Grealish's group.
Yeah. Yeah. After the last month anyway, he has to be.
They'll be taking him under his wing. Why did he start supporting Villa? Mine was 93 League Cup final. Sorry, 93-94 season. Everybody supported United from where I was from. And Villa beat them in the League Cup final. And yeah, Villa beat United. And like Dalian Atkinson, amazing. Amazing day. Yeah. And ever since then, I just started supporting Villa. Mostly probably to annoy people. I didn't really understand too much about it. But then they won the League Cup 2 years later. And I thought, Jesus Christ, this is going to be fucking good. This is going to be fun. I was glory hunting back then, and then 13 years later I'm celebrating Nigel Rio-Coker lifting the Peace Cup in a preseason. genuinely, like, you know, delighted about that. And you know what? I actually wrote this story into TalkSport back in the day, and Ian Wright laughed his head off, and he said, "That is too funny, man. That's too funny. I wish you could find it." I listened to the whole 3-hour show then just to hear they would read out my email. So hopefully people having their questions read out is the same thing as me back then.
Yeah, that's when you peaked as a journalist, having your question read out in TalkSport.
What about you?
Well, seeing as we, as in Irish people, have no association with the areas or the cities the clubs are based, most Irish people who do follow a Premier League club, and most do, pick a team based on an older family member. But it was slightly different for me, obviously. Our dad had no interest in football, so I picked the team guided by someone that, although we're not related to, he played a huge part in my early childhood and definitely in my emotional development. Paul McGrath.
Wow.
Just Paul McGrath was Ireland's icon. He was Ireland's best player, and it just seemed like a natural fit just to follow him to Aston Villa. He had transferred to the Villa not that long before I was, you know, I was required to pick a football team. So I picked Aston Villa. And much like yourself, it's been a roller coaster.
There is a god of football. His name is Paul McGrath. There's actually a great... No, what sums up Paul McGrath's influence in Ireland and, well, his standing, I suppose, is that documentary. That's the great thing I'm talking about. The Jack Charlton one. Finding Jack Charlton. And now, this is a documentary of an Irish legend. Like, Jack Charlton changed a lot for Ireland. Like, you know, even just culturally, like, it was a terrible time. And then he came along at the right time and just lifted the nation. Got everybody interested in football and gave us our biggest successes. At the time, they never qualified for major tournaments. So this whole documentary is about him, who's just passed away. And it's a fascinating documentary about dementia as well. So it was actually quite sad as well, watching some of it. And Paul McGrath just eats up a lot of that documentary, and there's no part of it where you're thinking, all right, mate, get off the fucking screen. You know, it's like Brendan O'Carroll is in the same documentary, Mrs. Brown's Boys writer and actor, and you're just like, right, you know, he's only on it for a little bit, but you're just like, right, get the fuck, you know, I think it's for 90s stars or whatever. Get back to the 90s with you, Brendan. But Paul McGrath was just like, yeah, just keep talking, like, you know, and just some of the stuff that, like, Jack Charlton did for him as well. Everybody just reveres Paul McGrath, well, beyond Ireland as well.
Mm-hmm.
This one's from Qatar Lions. Oh, reason for the song choice at the beginning of the pod.
That's a very good fucking question.
It was a bit of a trigger when I read it. I was like, hey, what's... I don't think they were suggesting anything.
I am going to assume they're suggesting something.
I was... Yeah, it's just a song that I really like. it's from Blind Pilot, a band called Blind Pilot. The Leeds podcast thought it was the script, and that definitely got me back up. I was feeling a bit sensitive about it then. And it's called Half Moon, and it's a really nice song. It's about this, you know, leaving behind the shit and moving on, and never losing that adventure spirit, but also finding sort of happiness where you are.
So it's not,
sorry, go on.
It's just Villa getting promoted and not losing Jack Grealish, the adventurous spirit, and staying in the Premier League, being happy where we are. See, that's I exactly. Just tended to start to drift off whenever it starts playing, so I've never actually heard the lyrics.
Yeah, it's just a song that I've always loved. It's a good morning song, and I always love the idea of having a podcast that's fresh. It sounds fresh to people. You know, when they hear it, it reminds me of the morning. Like, I love a fresh morning. You know, like, I'm not talking about when you're getting up and you're rushing to work or whatever. You're getting up and you have time, regardless of whether or not you have work. You just have time. You have time to yourself. You can look out. You can smell the wind. you just appreciate life in those little moments before it all just comes crumbling down to shit around you. And that song just captures it. And I just wanted to spread that bit of joy that I get to other people.
Beautiful. What's the next question?
Do you prefer to watch the game alone or with mates?
Why the fuck would you want to have someone else in the room with you when you're watching a football match? How's work going? What? I'm watching the match, mate. Matt Target has the ball at his feet. Literally anything could happen.
Yeah.
And you think this is a good time to try to grab my attention with a question that I wouldn't even find interesting during a week? Right. People will literally start a conversation about anything, regardless of what is happening in the world around them. Just have an insatiable appetite for human connection, it seems. Whenever there's football on, I'm as full as an egg, to be honest. Like, I've had to stop watching games with my mates, to be honest, and it's not because I don't like them, it's because I want to keep liking them.
Yeah. And what, the football? So, because there's two elements to it, right? You're right, like, you know, that sort of distraction, somebody just feeling like they have to talk about something, or this is now catch-up time. It's like when I said, let's watch the game, when I never would say that to somebody. It wasn't like, you know, we'll talk now while the game's on in the background. It's like, shut the fuck up, we'll watch the match.
Yeah.
But then there's also that element, the reason why I don't like watching a game in a pub, as well as it's just not as, you just can't concentrate on it as much. I like the whole experience. I like to hear what the commentator's saying. I like to be plugged into social media sometimes, you know, when you got a bit of time. That's why I miss the Waterbricks. And I like the analysis, and I just like to be able to focus on it without it being taken away. But also, there's just so much shit talk. Like, you know, if you're in a pub, and you can get that with your mates as well, who just, they've seen something wrong, or they're, I'd say, to be honest, I'm terrible company as well. They're too knee-jerk. Like, you know, so you sort of need that bit of space for yourself just to not have anybody else influence you.
Yeah, like watching the Man United game last night and just having messages coming from Man United fans on my WhatsApp complaining about Luke Shaw raking his foot down somebody's shin and saying it should never have been a free kick. Like, you know, this is the type of shit you get people talking whenever you're trying to watch a football match with them. People can't be trusted to have the correct opinion, so I just avoid them.
Is that a rule for life, or just football?
I'm starting to expand it more and more, I find, in my day-to-day life.
Yeah, you're going to bring it into the testing phase for general life. Favorite player, past and present? This is the last one. I'm going to... straight in, and I don't know if this is popular anymore, but like I adored Gareth Barry. I used to have this habit of, on all my school bags, I used to just get a Tippex pen and just splur Barry, you know, like in the sort of like the way it was like a kit that would go around sort of in a semicircle, not a full semicircle, and just six underneath it at the back of your school bag, you know, so it would look like I was wearing a Barry jersey around school. And probably people just thought it was called Barry and thought it was a loser.
Probably just a six-year-old called Barry, yeah.
But, yeah, like, I just adored him. Like, and I, like, just to play in every position, he was just an ultimate pro. We talked about before, go back to the transfer question, about how amazing it would be to drop a Gareth Barry or a Martin Larsson, Melberg even, just into that team now the way it is. Just a few ultimate pros and real leaders, like, and... and Shabari like proves it when he went on. He's proved what a touch of class he was as a footballer, and just as a wise head as well. And I feel like he was always a wise head way beyond his years. Villa, centre back, left midfield, centre midfield. Like, I loved him at left midfield, and he didn't have an ounce of pace on him. Like, that's how good he was. And then he moved into centre midfield, and he was even better. And I still remember opening, like, we used to get, remember the two papers we used to get back home. My ma used to buy them, the Daily Mirror, and then on the Sunday it was the News of the World. And I still remember opening one Sunday, and it was that big interview you had done about wanting to leave Villa, and like my heart sank, like I couldn't get over it. It was actually posing, like they obviously sent the photographer out and stuff, and I couldn't believe that this happened, because there was no social media back then and stuff, so you're not really following the day to day. You just get stuff on teletext, and then suddenly he's there doing a big interview about, like, you know, wanting to leave. And yeah, it was bizarre. And then when he went to Man City, I was so, like, gutted. Like, you know, I remember, like, having, like, these such cogent thoughts about, like, you know, this short-term, terrible, disgusting project that's never going to, like, you know, see beyond 2012 or whatever I thought it was at the time. And obviously he went and he won an FA Cup and he won the Premier League, and he obviously probably made the right decision for him, because he won some medals and got a lot more money. But, and Man City haven't gone away like I thought they would. I just thought these sheiks would come in and just lose interest after a few years and leave them in a terrible position. But yeah, that still cuts me deep, but I still have the same fond memories because he was there that long, you know.
Mm. I think for me, past or present, Jack Grealish is undoubtedly the answer to both.
Yeah.
You know, when someone says something trite or banal, like, what is it with football? It's just a bunch of men running around after a piece of leather. Like, yeah. They've obviously never taken the time to watch Jack Grealish play. They've never been kind enough to themselves to sit down and watch Jack Grealish glide across the football pitch or do things with a football that would make me pull muscles I didn't even know I had. Like, seeing passes while running at full speed, being kicked by a 13-stone centre-half of 45,000 fans screaming at him, telling him he's a cunt. Passes that I can't even see when I'm lying on my sofa with a bird's-eye ultra HD view of the pitch. I mean, like, you could give all our answers to that question, but, you know, the fact that hundreds of millions of other people care so much is a reason in and of itself that makes football so interesting. Tribal passion, the fact that there's 40,000 people spontaneously start singing about some young fella running around on the ground below them that they just love, even though they've never met him. The fact that if you play football, whenever you're watching the Premier League, you're watching the elite do things that you can only dream of with such ease that if it wasn't so gratifying and awe-inspiring, it would be heartbreaking at your own ability. Even like how far football's evolved in our lifetime, like the tactical war between managers, how players implement that, the passion and work rate, pressure. Like watching someone miss a penalty. Penalties are unmissable for a professional footballer.
Yeah.
They're so easy, but they miss them all the time. Like you could say any of that is a reason for why we love football, but I think Jack Grealish is a sufficient answer.
That's amazing. And I was just going to add to that, and I don't really feel like we need to add anything to it because it's perfect, but the lack of patience of some people, obviously they're not football fans really, but you know, to say there's nothing happening, it's a boring match and stuff, like that's what makes football so interesting as well, because it's hard to do something. Yeah. You know, like, and that's why you watch it with tenterhooks, because they have to try to do something to get through, or somebody has to make a mistake again. It sort of falls into the other aspect of it that you're talking about, and somebody has to do something amazing to create an imbalance, and you have to do it with your feet. To be able to control the ball with your feet and take somebody out of the game who knows that you're trying to take them out of the game. And yeah, that sort of sums up Jack Grealish perfectly, that he can do that every time he has the ball at his feet.
Yeah.
And on that note, we'll play you out with Blind Pilot's epic song, Half Moon. Enjoy football. Enjoy Jack Grealish. And hopefully you enjoyed this podcast. Let us know if you did. And we will see you on Sunday. Big one against Everton. See you then. The wind is calling my name, and I won't wait, or I'll never get on.